I bought that property for my ex-wife and the kids. It was a bad play, okay? I mean, I should have bought Bitcoin. If I'd have bought Bitcoin back then, it would have been 300 Bitcoin, okay? And I'd have spent $2.5 million and it would be about six times over that. So that's inflation, right? So
yeah.
that was not a great investment. I look at Bitcoin as a hybrid between the best location, real estate on the planet with the ability that it has no location whatsoever. And with that comes 24/7 liquidity. There's going to be five or six competitive nations, and I think Bitcoin's going to serve all of them, right? Because it's going to be the neutral little piggy in the middle without any exposure. It won't be piggy in the middle. It'll be like, I'm Cat Daddy, King Kong, the queen of all times, and I'm Switzerland. Like, we have no Switzerland anymore. Switzerland's, they're done. They've given all the data to everyone. Bitcoin, I think, is going to act as a virtual Switzerland in the future. I think I'll always value self-custody. Yeah. It may not be 80, 90, 100% of my position, okay? But I also don't carry $40 million around my front pocket all the time. To me, the 12.8, I mean, I didn't want to do that. You know, I've never done it before, by the way. I've never given any money to politicians. I don't like doing it. But for me, it was an investment. You just can't sit on Twitter and bitch about the government. At some point, you've got to make a bet and go, hey, I want to.
Bing bong. We are back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where we're chilling here in my man Gary Cardone's house. So, Gary, the second time we're here, but since that time, you made a firecracker of a video about selling real estate for Bitcoin. Mm. Obviously, you got your brother who's big into real estate. So, I want to start off the bat there. Like, you know, how has that experience been since you've sold a house for Bitcoin? And yeah, like kind of just switching over from like the cash flow to more of like the savings stuff. How do you compare those two things?
Well, every time I drive by the house, I see the great work they're doing over there. They put probably $100,000 worth of trees in it and it needed it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they were a neighbor and they got a good deal. I lowered my price 10%, I think 300 grand. And they bought it. I bought Bitcoin, I think it's 66. So they're probably in the money more than I am right now. And it bothers me not in the least, dude. There's all types of maintenance things they've got to do. I was not willing to do it. I'm a creative person and, you know, hanging around with a house and talking to plumbers and people to fix a roof or what color of paint or where the tree needs to go. I live in a house already that requires me to do all that. And I just thought that the real estate over there, look, I bought that property for my ex-wife and the kids. She didn't want to live there. It was a bad play. Okay. I mean, I should have bought Bitcoin. If I had bought Bitcoin back then, it would have been 300 Bitcoin. Okay. And I'd have spent $2.5 million and it would be about six times over that. So that's inflation, right? So
yeah.
that was not a great investment, but I didn't lose massive amounts of money and we'll know in a year.
Yeah.
You know, but cool thing is Pinellas County's not sending me tax forms. The water department's not sending me water bills. The no plumbers have to contact me now. I mean, it's reduced the amount of energy that I have to put into it. And I think people need to look at the energy they put in to some of these projects. Like if I could go do a couple of paintings or write a book or something, I think it's more valuable than me becoming a plumbing expert at this stage in my life.
Yeah. And I think it's like interesting too, because, you know, when you compare the two, like when you compare real estate, you know, obviously, like we mentioned, your brother's like super into it, but everything in the house is depreciating asset, right? Like the floors are depreciating, your fridge, all the appliances. You know, like you said, you got to have maintenance on like whether it's the landscaping or something along those lines. But the narrative around real estate is it always goes up, right? So where do you think like, I guess the shift for you was, or was there even a shift that it was, you know, maybe it's not the real estate or like the quote unquote, the land, because like the US has so much land that if we wanted to spread out, it would be perfectly fine. That it's more of just like the underlying currency that has been like just basically devaluing. And that's the reason why housing prices increase so much. Or was that always just something that you've kind of, because you've been in the industry and been in the business for so long, that's something that you've always known. And that's why Bitcoin clicked with you so quick.
I don't think it was so much that. The house for me, I've lived in maybe 15 homes.
Okay.
I think maybe 20. And one of my kids probably has lived in 12. She's 15, 17 years old. So like I'm not someone that goes, oh, this is my house and therefore this is my whole life. I think that's a massive mistake, especially in the 21st century. I have rented and I have owned. You never walk into my door, knock, 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 or a date. Hey, by the way, do you own this or do you lease it? If you did do that to me, I wouldn't even let you in the house. Why do you care?
Yeah.
You know, you meet me at a hotel, you don't look at me and go, hey, do you own the entire hotel or are you leasing the room? Right? You get on a plane with me and you go, hey, do you own the entire airline and the plane? Or so I'm not a real estate investor. I'm a guy that needs to live in a house. I've literally turned this whole house into business now, taking advantage of the whole COVID plan. I hope you guys plan for not getting much taxes for me and my expenses, and that this house is going to be offset because y'all drove me here. Like literally, I couldn't go to the office. I couldn't send my kids to school. So I reacted in a way that says, okay, well, I'm going to self-contain my entire environment since I can no longer depend on the United States of America's government to actually make some logical decisions. I have to now, you know, lock my whole area up and protect my ability to take care of my family. And that is producing energy, producing, you know, fuel for the future. And that's the way I see money, right? It's like, I'm just producing fuel. So, and for future prosperity. If I don't have any fuel in my car, I can't go anywhere. So to me, the house is sitting there. It doesn't move. It locks you into a position. If I could have rented this, I would have preferred to. This house, you want to talk about inflation? Because I don't think people really understand inflation. If I would have bought this house, if I would have bought Bitcoin in October 2020 with the exact same proceeds that I took from this house would be worth $72 million. Now, there's three or four people in this house. This is a really beautiful home. Like I know how to pick a home. I know how to furnish them. But it is not worth $72 million. And it's going to be worth $140 million in a year. That's what I think. Like, you start looking at that going, whoa, there's no chance this house is worth $140 million. Well, in Bitcoin terms, it is absolutely worth $72 million today, had I done that. And that's 4 years, man. That is a very, very, very short investment cycle. And real estate does not have that benefit. Real estate is an extremely long, illiquid cycle. And when you look at over 3, 4, 5 years, what you spent in mortgages, insurance. Oh, by the way, insurance got so radical over there, I didn't insure it. Mm-hmm. I just said, fuck it. Like, if it gets knocked over, I still got $1 million worth of land.
Yeah.
The Sarasota is underwater today. Yeah. Do you see any rain, dude? I don't see any rain. Sarasota literally underwater. Insurance rates are going to explode here.
Well,
you can't control those when you're owning a home. And if you have a mortgage, you're forced to do the insurance.
Yeah.
So these are just a couple of small examples how real estate is not a good investment, especially a home. Okay. A home is not an investment. A home is security. Mm-hmm. My Glock 19 that's sitting right over there that I could jump over and grab, it is not an investment. It's an insurance policy, right? But and it's probably not going to go up massively in value. They can make Glock 19s till the end of time.
Yeah.
Bitcoin's going to be hard to duplicate, copy, replicate. I look at Bitcoin as a hybrid between, sorry to interrupt you, but a hybrid between the best location, real estate on the planet with the ability that it has no location whatsoever. And with that comes 24/7 liquidity.
Yeah.
Both of these things are very, very, very different than real estate. I mean, massively different.
No, I mean, 100%. And I mean, I agree with you as well. I'm like kind of on the fence with whether or not like a personal home is like a good investment, quote unquote, or not, just because of the security aspect. But, you know, I mean, I agree with you. Like, you can't account for all of these outside factors with real estate, like insurance prices massively going up and all those kind of things. But I mean, at the same time, too, like Tampa real estate, like in the Tampa Bay area has gone up by 90% in the past 5 years, which sounds like great on paper. But if you compare that to Bitcoin, as you're saying, that's just like, it's like pennies on the dollar at that point too. So it is an interesting kind of dynamic, but part of the reason why is because of everything that's going on, right? Last time we spoke was, you know, shortly after they were printing all the money, and, you know, everything was still kind of okay, I would say. But now we're starting to see cracks. Like on Monday, Japan raised interest rates by 25 basis points and shit hit the fan, basically. It sent like the VIX skyrocketing to the third highest it's been since the Lehman Brothers and the COVID crash. So out of my lifetime, this is like almost like the third biggest event. And all it was Japan, you know, essentially raising by 25 basis points. So with all that being said, like, how are you viewing the way things are currently going on because of like all that? Because obviously, you know, you're in Bitcoin and, you know, you're seeing all the underlying inflation in multiple assets. So like, how are you looking at the overall macro economy? Are we fucked or what, man?
Are you looking for the best way to store your seed phrase? Well, I've got it for you. It's Stampseed. They've got the number one punch place where you can order a full-on package where they've got every single thing. They've got all the letters. You could just get it in there. And they've got this sick, sick hammer, which they've engineered to make it so easy for you to punch in that titanium steel plate and store your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. So go ahead and get your Bitcoin off of these exchanges and use promo code GREENCANDLE for 15% off. They're helping power their show. They've got the Bitcoin logo. You can punch it into your seed phrase as well if you could see it here. They've got a lot of cool stuff. And now I'm helping empower you to get your Bitcoin off an exchange utilizing Stampseed and storing your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. Now get to it. All right, back to the show.
Oh, are we fucked? The problem, you know, the problem might be so big that we won't get fucked because there's no way to solve this problem.
Yeah.
Like I always find it very interesting, these talking heads and really, really smart people that go on CNBC and The Economist and the triple doctorate MBA modeling guy. And look, I don't know anybody making 100 grand that feels rich. Okay. And most people ain't making 100 grand. So it's like, whoa, you're making 100 grand. I remember when you made 100 grand, it was like, dude, you're a baller. Okay. Like mm-hmm. You're at least in the top 25%. And that isn't even close to being true today. You cannot escape that to go to Starbucks and spend $6.25 for a cappuccino latte mati chai, that's pretty expensive. Okay. I mean, if you do that 365 days a year, it's, you know, $24,000.
Yeah.
I go to McDonald's every now and then with my kids, and I counted, how much does a McDonald's large fry cost today?
I think they got rid of the
$4.25.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think they got rid of the dollar menu, didn't they?
Well, it's $4.25 for large fry. How many fries are in there?
Probably less than there was 5 years ago.
How many do you think there are there? Count them.
45, 50.
50, that's 10 cents a fucking fry, dude.
Yeah.
10 cents a French fry. Like, they're this big. 10 cents.
All in seed oils and salt and all that kind of stuff.
Even if it was the best food on the planet, it's still only 50 or 60 pieces. It's 10 cents a French fry, okay? That is not sustainable. Not in any universe can she afford to pay $1 a French fry in 10 years. Mm-hmm. That's what will happen. You will be paying $1 per French fry per year. Every 10 years, that's what it's going to do. That is inflation. That is frightening. Okay. While gasoline prices are really low, electricity prices are really low. Crude oil is really low, in my opinion. Not one of you guys turned off your laptop computer last night. So electricity is too cheap. Mm-hmm. We abuse it every second of the day. Like I pound through this shit, dude.
Yeah.
Like, and if we had a different market, for instance, I should pay more than most people. Because I use more. Mm-hmm. That's the way this should work. Now, I could build the case that I do pay more. But if we're able to digitize the world, if we're able to actually, why is our world so messed up? Because the world is moving so rapidly that the tools we had from the 20th century are not capable of keeping up. And that's where this friction is from. I was just on the phone with a constitutional lawyer. Funny, Bitcoin's brought me into law, constitutional law, American politics, and media. It's staggering, man. Like Bitcoin's dragged me. People are like, what are you doing? I have to do all of this.
Yeah.
Because it's all correlated. And that's why, you know, you're going to ask me about me funding politicians, but like I'm funding my investment. Like, I think it's makes a lot of sense to invest with lawyers, lobbyists, and politicians to get a seat at the table to influence a message of what and why we should be doing Bitcoin as a nation. Sorry if I know I went.
I go
all over the place.
Yeah, that's
but
fine.
It's a big old world. It's a big market, and they're all connected. And so it's hard not to communicate about, you know, what's happening.
Well, I mean, I think that's the interesting part about, like, at least where Bitcoin has brought me is, like, I kind of got into this whole thing because of, like, personal finance, just figuring out how to grow my wealth. But now I feel like, yeah, I'm sitting here talking to you about real estate, Japan raising 25 basis points, like all this crazy stuff. But you realize, like, just how interconnected everything is. But, you know, to bring it back to the overall, like, macro, you know, environment, I don't really see, like, a path forward from here, right? Because we've raised interest rates so high, it seems like, you know, like you said, like inflation is crazy, where McDonald's fries now are 10 cents a pop. I mean, you know, they were calling for emergency rate cuts on Monday. If that happens, the floodgates are open, and then what, then where do we go going for there? Because like inflation is not, like, despite what macro economists on like MSNBC and Fox Business, all these places say, it's not under wraps yet. Like, everything is still super highly priced. So,
do you think so? I actually don't.
I want to hear what you have to say. That's what I'm asking.
What's really astronomically priced that you need?
Well, I think food. I think gas prices haven't really gone down. I think that gas is still like, what, like $3.50 a gallon? About
if you don't know, it's probably too cheap, dude.
Yeah.
See, if you don't know what the price of gasoline is, I'm kind of sure that it might be too cheap because it hasn't gotten your attention. See, you're smiling.
That's
you're like,
fair.
That was
fair,
fucking
man.
Knock my ass down, dude. Yeah. Seriously, okay? Nobody here knows what gasoline costs, really. You just go in and fill it, go, that's $70. Food, look, I walk into a grocery store and I see 4 ears of corn. I love corn. Mm-hmm. But I stopped buying them when they became a dollar. Like, I'm just like, hey, I'll just go buy the canned corn.
Yeah.
A dollar a head of corn. That's expensive, man. What's a gallon of milk?
I don't know. I'm lactose intolerant.
What, probably $4, right? Eggs are triple,
yeah,
quadruple
eggs,
price.
Eggs definitely. Yeah.
You know, now if you want to get some eggs, man, stick 2 chickens in your yard and you got more eggs than you can imagine. And you'll feed your neighbors. See, I like this price inflation stuff. My question to you was, what is inflating that you need? If egg prices go high enough, you're going to go stick some chickens in your backyard. That's cool. Let prices do what they're going to do.
But how feasible is that for everybody?
Everybody can do that. Come on, bro.
I mean,
I can feed all my neighbors, 5 neighbors here with 2 chickens, man.
Yeah.
Okay. So if we wanted to, you say how feasible it is. You let me know what the price is of eggs in a year, and I'll tell you how feasible it is. Feasibility starts to get triggered when it becomes too expensive to do something else.
Yeah, people right? start to find a way, I guess, is what you're kind of saying.
Crude oil, right? All the crude oil and that gas that was found in the United States in the last 10 years, it happened at between around $30.
Yeah.
$30 crushed the oil companies. They're like, fuck, we can't make any money. How can we make money doing it? So it drove innovation, right? At the top end of the market, if we just drive these prices right up, I will stick chickens in my yard. Congresswoman did it. She's the one that turned me onto it. She's got chickens. I'm like, wow, that's cool. Now, this county doesn't allow chickens. And I looked at her and went, hey, if I get sued, will you cover me up? I mean, who's going to sue me for having chickens in my yard to feed myself? Right? You need maybe 20 square feet. Dude.
Yeah.
you could still grow in your own lettuce. There's hydroponics and stuff like that. We have a lot of technology today, okay? The point I was trying to make about the guy that I was speaking to, the constitutional lawyer, he thinks the First Amendment, which is freedom of speech, right, is literally more protective of the Second Amendment than the Second Amendment, because he said there is no way you're going to stop technology from making a gun, plastic gun. So look at there, look at the problem. Hey, we're going to stop having the guns. You can't buy guns. That's inflation. When you can't buy something, right, it is inflation, because now what's the price? The price is the black market. And so the whole technology, oh, really? We can't sell a Glock anymore? How about a lock with a little plastic bullet, right? So I just believe technology is going to solve a lot of problems, dude, if we don't fuck with price.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it already, like, kind of in a sense is, right? I mean, like, we're finding ways to innovate with Bitcoin mining to make energy cheaper when the energy prices are going up. We're finding ways to stabilize the grid utilizing that. I mean, I know people that have been able to, like, 3D print a gun and do things like that, too. So I think there's innovation on that. But there's also, like, you know, the inflationary pressures that are just making things cheaper, like in general, that are like just not as strongly built. Like housing is a great example. Like if you look at the materials now of like a house that's made in 2024 and you look at the materials made like 20 years ago, like I don't know if like these new houses that are being built are really going to be worth what they're selling for, because like the wood that they're using is all cracking. Like they're trying to find ways that basically are making things that are a necessity just made cheaper. And that's what we've seen in like the degradation in food and all those things. So that's what I think, that's what worries me the most, is not only like the unaffordability, but also like we're going to start, you know, killing people by like poisoning the food that we're, or even more so than we're already doing. Like, you know, things are just going to keep getting cheaper and cheaper, where that's where it's going to be the slow like degradation of everything. Now, the only, I guess, hope that I kind of see for all this is like basically putting Bitcoin on the balance sheet for the United States to kind of help solve our debt problem, which Trump has talked about a little bit, and we'll get into that in a minute. But from like all of this perspective, like, do you think, I guess, essentially the next step would be to almost like print money or print our way out of it again? Because, you know, when we were in 2020, we printed 60% of the money supply. So I think, as we keep getting down this inflationary path, we're going to have to keep printing more. And then that's where we see the bigger swings up and down. And that's why we saw what we saw on Monday.
Are you looking for the easiest way to get your Bitcoin off an exchange? Well, I've got it for you. It's Foundation Devices. They've got the number one hardware wallet in the Passport. They've even got a concierge service that can help you get your Bitcoin off an exchange within 1 hour private onboarding session. And they've got a great app too, which will give you extremely, extremely, extremely private features on that app. So you can use Bitcoin in the most secure way possible. So I've been working hard trying to get sponsors to help you get your Bitcoin off an exchange. And I found it with Foundation. And you can store your seed phrase with a stamp seed punch plate as well. So pair all those together. Use promo code GREENCANDLE at foundation.xyz and you'll get $10 off your entire order. All right, that's enough for me. Back to the show.
What's the question?
The question is do you think we're basically going to have to print our way to get out of this mess? Or do you think that we're not even like really in a tough economic place where we can just basically like keep it even, if that makes sense?
There is no printing your way out of this problem, but you will print your way out of the problem. You'll pretend to look, they're just managing time, dude.
Yeah.
Okay. Look, I just don't want to confront how painful this surgery is going to be. So I'm going to push it out into the future 3 or 4 years and I'll confront it later. Hopefully I'm still alive. People do that all the time with their medical conditions. I don't want to look at it right now. I'll deal with it later. There is no other option but to print it. Okay. It is a printing society. It's what we do with currency. So you're not going to stop it. Literally there is no way to stop it. You could blow the Fed up and it's not going to stop it because there's five other countries doing it. Yeah. The insanity, the neuroses that we have is that we actually think the Fed can do anything or is relevant. I don't think the Fed is relevant here, dude. They may bounce around for 48 hours and do stupid shit, but you're not paying back 35,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, $35 trillion. It's five X that. It's quadrillions of dollars. There is no fucking scooping all that sand up and putting it back in the ocean. It's not going to happen. So you're going to just go at some point, you will reset. And I don't think it's going to be in 3 months. They're going to stick as much morphine in this patient as possible. And we're going to have one monster asset run here. Just, it's going to just absolutely explode. And anybody that's in the 90%, it's going to be more like you're in the 98%. And it's going to be, you know, the seesaw is going to be like this, right? You remember playing a seesaw when you were a kid? Yeah. Hey, look, you got to be careful when people get off the other end. All these people moving out of California. I was like, dude, California is going to go in a shithole one day. Well, yeah, you're losing all your rich people, man. And then all of a sudden, it's only poor people. I mean, super poor people living there. And it becomes a viral infested area that you can't, it just has to go to scrape it. Flush the toilet and start over. I mean, that's really what happens. That's why you have a change of empires, right? Because one becomes weak and one becomes strong.
Yeah.
So, and this whole Bitcoin thing is there's already so many chessboard moves being made geopolitically. We have decided not to globalize. Mm-hmm. Once we started doing sanctions and embargoes, dude, it's game over for us being a one-party world. This is now down to there's going to be 5 or 6 competitive nations, and I think Bitcoin's going to serve all of them, right? Because it's going to be the neutral little piggy in the middle without any exposure. It won't be piggy in the middle. It'll be like, I'm Cat Daddy, King Kong, the queen of all times, and I'm Switzerland. Like, we have no Switzerland anymore. Switzerland's like, they're done. They've given all the data to everyone. Mm-hmm. So Bitcoin, I think, is going to act as a virtual Switzerland in the future.
Yeah. And I think that's fair to say, right? Because essentially it's, you know, it's not controlled by anybody. And that's kind of the way out of it. So, but with all this and the crazy asset inflation, I guess, like, where do you see Bitcoin going, like, price wise? Do you think it's just going to blow the top off? Do you see $1 million coin? Like, where do you see us going from here with Bitcoin? Because, I mean, it is the most liquid asset on the market, right? You can trade it 24/7, 365, which I think is also a positive and a negative, because you see real estate always kind of continually go up, like, slow and steady. Outside of like the 2008 crash, you don't see any like dramatic shots down because of just how illiquid the market is. But with Bitcoin, you see the volatility up and down. So how high do you see Bitcoin going this cycle?
I'm more conservative than Michael Saylor. He's at what? His low end is 3 million by 2050. Mm-hmm. And his high end is 47. It should do things that no other commodity's ever done. Really, it should literally do things and behave in a way that we've never, ever seen. All these power models, and I like all these guys. I know them all quite well. One of them actually was a professor at my school. I thought that was hilarious. The physics guy, professor at my old school, 10 years after I left. And we come together on a Twitter space, and he talks about McNeese State University. I'm like, huh? Here's a D student. Like, I was not a good student. I was really not a D, but if you were a dick teacher, I would make a D just to show you how bad of a teacher you are. I just didn't care, right? Mm-hmm. And here he's coming in, a professor of physics, doing these fucking models that are crazy, right? And he and I are on a bloody space. And I'm like, dude, let me explain my model to you. There's 2,516 billionaires. There's 406,000 ultra wealthy people and 62 millionaires. The millionaires are going to buy $2,500. the ultra wealthy are going to buy 2.5 million, and you only need 200 billionaires. This is going to sound stupid to you guys, but you only need 10% of those billionaires stacking a billion each. You don't think billionaires won't buy $1 billion worth of Bitcoin? You're totally confused. Okay. 20% of their stack. If I'm right, their stack goes to 100, right? And if I'm wrong, it goes to 0 and they still got 4 billion. They'll take this bet all day long. It's so asymmetrical. Mm-hmm. People with real money, dude, the asymmetric value of this trade is just like, really? I mean, really? I can take 20% of my liquid net worth and smack it on Bitcoin black, red, orange, yellow, green, has no duration. This roulette table is going to just be open 24/7, and I just get to sit there and wait for the number to show up. Sooner or later, dude, the Bitcoin number is showing up on that roulette wheel because I never leave the table. My bet never gets washed out if I don't have any. If I'm liquid enough and I'm not leveraged, it's a very good analogy. Actually, I've never used it before. The deeper I get into Bitcoin, I'm like, all these analogies are so awesome. A roulette table, casino never shuts down. You never get punked out. Like every roll of the dice, you just keep sticking your bet on. Just keep rolling. I'm waiting for the Bitcoin multicolor, multi-durational play, and it's going to freaking happen one day. You know, we had a monster move the other day on Bitcoin. If you don't like Bitcoin, see, I disagree with you. This is not a negative for Bitcoin. It's a negative because you get emotional about it because maybe your position is so big. You're like, yeah, that was a big move. Okay, that's cool. Maybe your position is a little too much big for you, or you just got a little nervous. You need to talk to your coach, right?
Yeah.
But the truth is, if it didn't punk you out, it's still the best asset in the world. It has every characteristic and performance. It's like checkbox, 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 checkbox. The move we had the other day, everyone should be prepared for 3 to 5 of these a year. Mm-hmm. 30, 40%. Stick your bid in, dude. Put your bid there. Get ready. This is an attribute for Bitcoin. Now, this is my strategy. Now, for lazy investors, at 20% off the all-time high, I start moving money into exchanges so I can buy. And then I sit there and wait. I go, okay, well, it's 74. I'll pick some up at 60, dude. 14 bucks off 74, what's that, about 20%? If I get another wedge at 57 like we did the other day, and buy some more, man.
Yeah.
Right? This asset is not going away. It has been approved by every country club on the planet. China, we're going to mine. Yeah. Russia, we're going to mine. Trump, we're going to keep 210,000 Bitcoin on Treasury, and we're going to mine like a motherfucker. Okay, we're going to drill, drill, drill. Electricity is going to be zero. By the way, electricity will be zero. We should be swimming in electricity. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited about if we get the right administration in, I think America is going to embrace energy and Bitcoin, AI, in a way we've never seen. We've been putting stops on all this innovation. This is an easy pitch to go to politicians, okay? And the pitch is this: sir, you're being invited to this party, but we don't really, Bitcoin gives a fuck less if America comes into it or not. Yeah. We're 40% of the mining rate right now, okay? You want to give 20 or 30 of it to somebody else? Get after it, man. They'll take it from you. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to actually compete like a motherfucker. Excuse my language, but you're going to have to compete against major sovereigns, Iraq, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Russia. And they don't care about your embargoes and sanctions. Like these sanctions we're doing to sanction Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a question, okay? What happens if America goes insane with 40% of the hash rate? And they start telling everybody right now, hey, look, you know, if Putin mines Bitcoin and they put it into, and all of a sudden I get some, I'm in Italy, I'm shopping, a guy, you know, I meet some rich guy and I don't know, and he wants to transact Bitcoin with me and that's mined in Russia. What, now am I carrying polluted Bitcoin?
Yeah.
When 9% of the world is like in Bitcoin from the United States and for, really? Now that's a problem. Okay, for an American, that it becomes a issue. Really, oh, I have a toxic entire bag now because I bought an international commodity and it's got Russian taint on it, right? Not one barrel of crude oil has stopped flowing after these sanctions. They've just been priced differently.
Yeah.
Right? But they don't stop flowing. And no energy ever stops flowing. The price just changed. So these sanctions and embargoes, it's such an old thesis. It's not going to work in the future.
Well, I mean, even like trying to stop Bitcoin mining hasn't worked. China tried it, right? I mean, then like if you look at the hash rate, they like outlawed Bitcoin mining. There was even videos like a couple years ago of them like getting those big giant construction trucks running over Bitcoin miners. A lot of it moved to Kazakhstan and to here. But if you look at the hash rate now, like China still has a decent clip of that. So, I mean, I don't think that that would like essentially ever happen. And I think it's just at this point, it's like bad business. And I think that's what Trump and RFK have realized. And that's why they were at the Bitcoin conference this past, a couple of weeks ago, like speaking to all these Bitcoiners, because they see exactly what you're saying, like innovation should just be essentially embraced. So, you know, I guess where is like the dichotomy with that? Because politicians want to keep power. And Bitcoin essentially is, like you said, kind of like a Switzerland of sorts, where it would kind of take a little bit of that power away from the monetary policy. But at this point, it seems stupid for politicians to not embrace Bitcoin. So from your experience speaking to a lot of them, like how are they kind of, I guess, like balancing that where they still want to have like governmental power, but they understand that like Bitcoin's kind of the new wave and they need to embrace it if they want to essentially keep their jobs or, you know, get into this new position of power.
Are you looking for a way to live on a Bitcoin standard? Have you been trying to do it? You just can't figure it out? Well, I've got it for you. It's at BitRefill. You could go to bitrefill.com/invite/greencandle to sign up, where you can use Bitcoin to buy gift cards on Airbnb, Uber. You could buy plane tickets with Bitcoin. So you can travel the world, see everything going on. You can even buy eSIMs when you're there to help contact your friends and family. So go ahead and join the revolution, live on a Bitcoin standard so you don't have to wait for the banks after you sell your Bitcoin, transfer the fiat to your bank, and then go through all the rigmarole, all the fiat trash that you've tried to get through and avoid. Avoid all that, use BitRefill, and sign up here today, and I'll give you $5 towards everything that you are buying with BitRefill. All right, enough from me. Join the revolution on the Bitcoin standard, and back to the show.
I think if we stop marketing Bitcoin as a solution to the Fed or a replacement, I think that's the wrong pitch. I think the right pitch, the pitch I've used with the congressmen, the senators, and Mr. Trump and Kennedy was, and invited the Democrats in this home. Nobody showed up. I look at that and say, hey, look, there's 2 to 3 million jobs at $150,000 to $300,000 a year. These are careers, not jobs, actually. They're careers for the next 10 to 15 years. Requires no college education. Like, I could hire somebody tomorrow morning and within 40 hours, like literally 1 week of study, they will have a better basic understanding of 95% of the people on the planet on digital. So why wouldn't we just look at our politicians and go, there's 3 million jobs. Do we want them in Dubai or America? Do you want them in Texas or do you want them in Kazakhstan? Do you want them in, I mean, it's really up to you guys. I don't give a toss. I can hire them anywhere. Mm-hmm. But we, like, I would go back to good old 1920 principles. Hey, bring a business here and we'll support you. We're not going to tax the shit out of you. There's some really minor little changes that Trump could make on taxation on Bitcoin, makes it easier. He should be looking at this just like he does securities or commodities. And hell, I'm going to go sit down and talk to him about moving real estate, doing 1031s on Bitcoin. We're early stages, dude. They're going to listen to a lot because they're gonna need solutions here. Every political process, we're selling this incorrectly. Okay. We need to admit that we have had really a bastardized, very odd way of selling adoption. It's like, we want adoption, but we don't want you. Like, no, dude, this has got to be everybody. Bitcoin's for everyone. Remember that principle?
Yeah,
I remember that. First thing I read, Bitcoin's for everyone.
Of course,
good,
yeah.
The good, the bad, and the ugly, right? So you don't get global acceptance without these big boys. And it's a journey, man. Since you've known me, I was like, nah, this is never going retail, dude. It's going to go institutional. Okay. It's just the way these markets work. Wholesale markets first, and then retail markets. Because you need that liquidity. I mean, you know, Cantor Fitzgerald's coming into this market. They handle trillions of dollars. They're the ones that cleaned up the whole FTX Tether thing. They're like, this is nothing money.
Yeah.
So we need that kind of flow. That's so promising that a guy like Cantor's coming in here. Like, we need those facilities. I'm probably going to borrow money against my Bitcoin with Cantor. Isn't that interesting? I'm not doing it with a Bitcoin guy. I'm doing it with an institutional player. Why? Because their fees are going to be better, dude. Like, I go to all these Bitcoiners going, hey, store custody your Bitcoin with me and I'll let you borrow it back at 15%. I'm like, fuck off, dude. 15%. That's ridiculous. This is the most golden collateral in the world, and you know it. Like, some of these Bitcoin guys pitching me 15%. I'm like, dude, you know this is gold. This is better than gold. It's perfect collateral. I should be able to borrow at 2 or 3%. If the Fed rate is 5, I should be able to borrow fucking Bitcoin. I should be able to loan out. I should be able to borrow against my Bitcoin at sub-Fed because it's perfect collateral. Am I wrong? Perfect collateral should come with the best price.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. And I find that that's going to change, dude.
Yeah, I think more of these products are going to start to come out. And I think we just kind of saw a lot of people.
Cantor's first move is $2 billion.
Okay.
That's their first entry. $2 billion.
Yeah.
That's okay. The size of, you know, the top. That's the size of most of the miners.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, it's more of these products and more of this innovation is going to come forward. And I think that's kind of the biggest step, right? Is we're still very early in all this, right? I mean, we had the ETFs just come out, January of this year.
Yep.
And so now the institutions are kind of coming into it. So how do
kinda.
You, well, I mean, it seems like,
I don't know what else y'all need. Y'all say kind of, I mean, you got, 91 trillion horses blowing right through your pasture. Coming in, man, and you're like, hey, we're kind of making some progress. I'm like, well, you said $91 billion come into this market.
Yeah, but it seems like
in a quarter, dude.
Yeah, but from what you can tell, it's like a few big players coming in, but it's not a lot.
A few. Come on, Magellan put $2 billion in. They were the biggest player.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, since January this 11th, the ETF launch, we have $91 billion go into the deal. We have the state of Wisconsin dropped $151 million, and it's 0.5% of their portfolio.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't think this was all, this was the first 90 days, man. The state of freaking Wisconsin. No one would have predicted that. Like, you know, I know a lot of people, not one of these guys, including Saylor, dude, not one of us expected this much volume.
Yeah.
Not Larry Fink. And the quality of players you're seeing is actually accelerated beyond what I thought. This was early. Yesterday, 15,000 Morgan Stanley guys got released. These are animals, dude. Okay. There's 300,000 people like Morgan Stanley advisors. They're all going to pump Bitcoin, dude. These are best salesmen in the world. Okay. Yeah. These are guys showing up to my house with, a case of tequila. Going, hey, G, what's up? We're going to put you into a new asset class. Let's get drunk and talk about it. I mean, that's the way this shit happens, right? And all of a sudden, my brother called me up the other day trying to embarrass me in front of a bunch of Bitcoiners with his big stack of real estate. Hey, it's $57,000, and I think I'm going to buy 2,500 Bitcoin, Gary. How long is it going to take me? In front of 1,000 people. About 10 hours, dude. If you do it over 10 hours, you won't even move the market. He's like, that's bullshit. I'm like, dude, your 2,500 Bitcoin gets sucked up in this market like you're a little dick. I mean, you're just nothing. $50 billion a day trades in this market. That's a monster market, dude. It's just starting. So I think I think some of you guys don't really fully appreciate how long it takes to do what we have done in the most bastardized, unorganized, decentralized manner. And that's why we did it stupidly, because it's decentralized. There's no marching orders. There's no central authority. There's no general going, we will communicate in this manner. We are Barclays, a 420-year-old bank, and this is our message, right? I mean, they have a message, but Bitcoin's messages. Greg has a different message than I do. Bob has a different message than Greg does. But I think we're getting better communicators. Like, if you notice the way Saylor is communicating, his last pitch, this is the other thing you should look at. His last pitch, he's no longer even talking to small businesses. He has now moved his sights into the sovereigns. His messaging is awesome. And the rest of us need to move our sights a little bit below his. Let him take that major message to prime ministers, kings, major institutions. That's the pitch on the, hey, look at this model. That is what he's doing. Hey, guys, like, if you really zoom out, go, who's his audience? Dude, he's talking about monster money. So then we can, like, we need to all up our game to be able to talk to these institutions in a very, very pragmatic way.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And I think, you know, I was looking at, I actually heard a talk of somebody who was breaking down like Saylor's most recent pitch at the Canadian conference earlier this year. And he said he was kind of comparing it to how he, as a contractor, would pitch to these big businesses to come in. And basically, it was like using very similar verbiage, like that kind of way to come in.
Sure.
So Saylor is definitely, like you said, like improving his pitch in that sense. And it seems like he's getting more institutionalized as well. And on top of that, like, he's got like a lightning summit in Orlando, I think it was maybe last year or somewhere in Florida, that he's like now pitching it to businesses as well, having guys like Jack Dorsey come as well too. So I think it's just getting more and more institutionalized. And like, nation state adoption is just coming. And that's what we're seeing in this wave. Yeah. We saw four more businesses put it on their balance sheet, at least publicly traded businesses. And then now we're seeing, obviously, the U.S. like talk about just not even selling it. So I think that that's where the next major wave is. And I think the initial push from that was because of like, basically BlackRock and all those big players coming in. Like, once the big asset managers come in and add a little bit more validity behind it, like, now a nation state can take that risk. Do you see it that way? Or do you see like, maybe it's just not exactly correlated? It's just like, this was all kind of destined to happen.
I think you have game theory now going on, like popcorn.
Yeah.
Like, the popcorn now is just, we've done, you have released the genie. I mean, you're not sticking this genie back in the bottle. She ain't going back in. It's more like a kraken, actually, than a genie. So it's going to go wild. This is it is the perfect animal spirit commodity. Like, it's going to always attract animal spirit guys like me. Like, it will, and we will play with it. And you needed major institutions here before any of this could be possible, dude. Like, and we're blessed. We're blessed to have BlackRock here so quick and with validation. I mean, blessed. I don't mean it. Somebody had to do this, dude. It wasn't going to be Swan. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, you need a major player, a Goldman, somebody like that. So I don't think there's a lot now we can do to slow this bad dog down. I just think she's going to just run and run and run. The question for the United States is, are we going to be the lead innovation nation, or are we going to lag and drag? It seems like that's what we're going to do. We're going to fight it. And it doesn't really matter. And that would be my message to governors, senators, congressmen, and presidents. You do whatever you want, okay? But like, it's no longer now, you're now being obstructive to the future of our ability to innovate. We have some of the most dense energy on the planet. We have some of the smartest people in the world. And for us not to lead both money and technology into the future, I think that's a huge error. It's not going to be a winning solution when there's five other markets that are wanting part of their market, the market share that we have.
Now, yeah, I mean, there's obviously been like somewhat of an attack on Bitcoin for like the privacy aspect, right? I mean, we've had a lot of people kind of go against that. And it seems like almost like the next logical step for a lot of these governments is like, you know, you've got a stamp seed here and this is like a foundation hardware wallet. So essentially, like, this is to be used for self-custody, right? So do you see that as like a potential next step where they're going to attack it and just like you essentially have to hold Bitcoin through one of these, you know, custodians, whether it's like BlackRock or something like that? Where
I mean, they can try to do that, but prohibition's never worked. Prohibition's never worked, not one day, ever. And America loves the prohibition to believe it works. Drugs, not work. Alcohol didn't work. Abortion will never work. Okay. Like, I don't even know what the big deal is. So people are going to go get whatever they want. I would really probably just make most everything legal except killing things and let people just do whatever they want.
And
we don't even have any policemen that are actually putting people in jail for breaking the rules. So why do we have any freaking rules? But I don't know. I don't think you're going to be able to stop this, but I think the ETF has been, the ETFs are going to water down the benefits of self-custody.
Okay.
And I mean, I think the big loser from self-custody, hear me all the way out, please, Bitcoiners. The big loser of where we're going and how we're getting adoption is the wallet. Because like all of a sudden now big players have the ability to do this in a way that does not require them some of this difficulty and unknowingness. Like whatever you can say about the banking, there are things I know or don't know about the banking that I don't have to deal with here.
Yeah.
I've accepted them over the last 50 years. As having said that, I think I'll always value self-custody.
Yeah.
It may not be 80, 90, 100% of my position, okay? But I also don't carry $40 million around my front pocket all the time,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, I'm not like, or gold. I mean, if I got to jump, I'm probably not going to carry 30 weapons with me and 1,000 pounds of gold. And do we really want to live in that world?
Yeah,
I don't want to live in that world, man. I it's cool preparing for that world, but I don't want to live like it's going to happen tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm.
I think the higher the price goes, dude, self-custody is going to become important. Now, why did I say, please hold on with me? January the 11th or when, not August, the whenever Trump was shot is 6/11/33. If that was never a sale for self-custody, dude. See, this is what I think people like the Ledgers of the world are not taking advantage of because they don't know how to market properly. Self-custody should be about, hey, your fucking president just got his ear ripped off. If you don't think they'll shoot you in the face, they will take your money, dude. That's a great pitch, okay? As soon as he got shot, I'm like, man, dude, that's the reason I should have more money in self-custody, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he didn't know 5 minutes before that he needed a turn. And you're not going to know.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to know. So if it serves a purpose, it's going to sell like a son of a bitch, right? If it meets the needs of the market, it's going to do extremely well. If the ETF meets the needs of the market, it's going to do very well. And there'll be a bank one day that goes, hey, wow, people want self-custody in an ETF. I'll sell that. That'll all show up, man.
Yeah. All right. Before I let you go,
They're bugging us.
Yeah, they're bugging us.
30 other meetings I have.
Yeah, but I got to ask you one last question about the decision to donate the 12.8 Bitcoin to Trump's campaign. Talk about like how that was received with him, because obviously, you know, he's just kind of going through that and, you know, kind of your conversation with Trump when it comes to Bitcoin and how that all went.
To me, the 12.8 was... I mean, I didn't want to do that. You know, I've never done it before, by the way. I've never given any money to politicians. I don't like doing it. But for me, it was an investment. I have enough Bitcoin now that I wanted to, one, I could have done this straight through Trump. Mm-hmm. That people need to understand, I could have whacked Trump. I could have flown on my plane, given him $1 million and been in his little inner circle. I didn't do that specifically. I did it through Bitcoin. I did it through Bailey because I wanted, one, I wanted the Bitcoin community to wake up and go, hey, we have to invest in our future, man. Okay? You just can't sit on Twitter and bitch about the government. At some point, you got to make a bet and go, hey, I want to influence reform, which most people don't know. That is my background. I actually go into countries and like work with the government while I'm trading and make sure they don't listen to the big players. See, all they're doing is listening to the lobbyists from the big players. I want to be able to go in there and go, hey, I can build an education system. You guys are doing this so badly. I mean, I can't possibly do it worse. And by the way, I have some input. I've got an energy background, a payments background, and a Bitcoin background. There's a lot we can do with Bitcoin. It's just not well understood. So cost me $1 million to have people start texting me and going, hey, do we like this bill? And I'm like, well, let me read it and check it out, man. I'll get back to you in 30 minutes or have Sam call him, right? And now we're engaged, right? Now we're talking to people. Also, back to, I don't think we've sold this very well. There are very few commercial people in Bitcoin. Like by commercial, I mean, understands economics of how do you make money and build things. And I don't see them in the miners. I don't see them in the Bitcoin holders. And the politicians most certainly aren't commercial. Mm-hmm. So I think I have a way to, and also to go back into some decisions the government have made in the past and use those and say, hey, let's bring those into this solution, right? Which is open access. If there's availability on the pipes with an open source blockchain, gosh, we ought to be able to see everything that's going on. And if some guy wants to go stamp on Ordinals because there's some capacity, fuck, dude, this is a business. He's going to go grab capacity on Bitcoin and he's going to try to commercialize it until he can't. And then somebody else comes up with a better idea because he's commercializing it too well or too poorly. And then you just have a whole ecosphere around Bitcoin. But to try and get somebody to go from first base to fourth base, hey, we're going to take over the Fed. It's just too much. And it's a career killer. Like no politician is going to support it. So I think Bitcoin's a beautiful Trojan horse. And I don't know why everybody keeps using the, you know, hey, let me stab you in the eyeballs to get your attention. Like Trojan horse, dude, it's cool. We can be quiet, professional. So that was what the $1 million. I want to be able to pick up the phone and go, hey, this is wrong. Or, hey, let's do it this way.
Well, there we go. Awesome stuff. Well, Gary, we always leave time for more conversation, but I appreciate you coming on,
there'll
man.
There'll be plenty of things to talk about.
Yes, sir.
This is going to be a great story.
All right, man.
Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you for tuning in to the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here. And you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guest. Or if you're looking for more macro-related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.